Hello, I'm Eric Holdeman, and this is Disaster Zone, a podcast about emergencies and disasters. Disaster Zone will bring you interviews and commentaries about all aspects of disasters, from what causes them to how people and organizations are dealing with their impact. This podcast is being sponsored by Dynamis, a leading provider of information management software and security solutions. You can find them at dynamis.com. Welcome to the Disaster Zone podcast. I'm Eric Holdeman, your host, and with me today is Luke Myers, who's with the state of Hawaii, and he's the state disaster recovery coordinator for the Maui fires. Normally, I think he's the disaster management coordinator, helping the governor with policy level issues at the state. And this podcast, we're going to dive into not so much the operational response to the Maui firestorm. Instead, we'll be talking about the policy level implications of the aftermath of the Maui wildfires of 2023. Welcome to the show, Luke.
Eric, thank you for the opportunity to be here. It's been a while. Look forward to the discussion today.
And Luke and I have known one another for a number of years. And I commented that he looked like he'd lost weight. And how many pounds is that due to being the Maui recovery management person?
I've lost about 12 pounds since the August fire. So it's keeping me busy.
Yeah. And so if you're looking to lose weight, have a really big disaster. Not the best way to do it. So previously, Luke, we talked when you were with Hawaii State Emergency Management as the director there. Today you have that new role. How about briefly explaining what that role is?
Yeah, so day to day, I'm the State Disaster Management Coordinator for the Office of the Governor of the State of Hawaii. Covered a number of recovery and resiliency roles that before the fires, we had a heavy focus on water resiliency. A lot of development and policy issues on the disaster side have implications with water. But since August of last year, I've had the role of the State Disaster Recovery Coordinator. I oversee the Office of Recovery and Resiliency, a small team that's been working with our state RSFs and the federal and county RSFs in support of the Maui fires.
Okay, we're acronym free. So RSF.
Yes, recovery support functions, the peer of the emergency support function. So on the federal side, they have six recovery support functions that run from infrastructure to housing to economics. On the state side, we have seven. We split public health and healthcare services separate from social services. So my role day to day is working with these different organizations and bringing together resources to support Maui and their ongoing recovery efforts.
Okay, I'm starting to feel old in the tooth here. So when did RSFs come about?
The National Disaster Recovery Framework, probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I know FEMA has, Federal Emergency Management Agency has recently kind of refined it in 2022. So as the National Disaster Recovery Framework updates, the states and locals try to adjust their structures to align with the federal family.
Right. Okay. Well, I haven't been doing any disaster recovery lately, so that might be it. Well, just from a personal level, and all disasters, even for emergency managers, as we watched, whether it's Superstorm Sandy or 9/11, we have a personal reaction to that. So you likely watch the entire Maui firestorm unfold, I would say, with horror. What was your personal experience with learning about the fires as they spread and then as the total impact of them sunk in? How'd that play out?
Yeah, for me, this was the governor was out of town. So like with many other incidents that unfold in the state, I try to stay abreast of potential impacts of an incident unfolding and just give my advisement respecting our state emergency management program, the director and the administrator. In this situation with him traveling, I got to share some time with the lieutenant gov Early on in the morning, we had a Hurricane Dora going south of the islands, way far away, in a very strong high pressure system, and it created a pressure gradient over all the islands. And it was August, so we had dry air and extreme fire weather. So as the day unfolded with a door going by, just advising the lieutenant governor on the potential for fire activity, we had some small spot fires, not anticipating what was going to happen. And I, as the fire information really became clear the next morning, there were some social media reports overnight. I saw some Civil Air Patrol video, and it was the first early in the morning, and it looked like a bomb had went off. Everything was smoldering in the Lahaina area. And the first thing that I thought of, I've been in Hawaii since August of 2018, when I came to work in the State Emergency Management Program out here. And it was almost 5 years to the date. I arrived a week before Hurricane Lane, which also had come south of the islands and caused fires in West Maui. And I was on the first flight, the first flight of the morning, the last flight in August of 2018, as Hurricane Lane came by south of the state and Lahaina was burning. And so I just, a little chicken skin, just talking about the parallels between tropical systems and extreme fire conditions 5 years apart in the same area. It really kind of sunk into me that, yeah, there were a lot of impacts in 2018, but this time, maybe with some more extreme winds and greater firefighter challenges, the impacts were going to be much worse.
Okay. All right. And then you don't have an operational role, but did you call the governor, or the lieutenant governor's one contacted him to say, hey, we've got a real issue here?
Lieutenant Governor Luke, I called her. Usually we just text and share information. Usually mine are just very, very high. This is what's going on. Right. If state emergency management, if the machine has not shared information, please expect it. And that's all it was. I had no real situational awareness of what was going on the ground until reports the next morning. So very high level, and it's just kind of a my daily awareness of what's going on in the Pacific, far or nearby, just sharing that information with the state leadership.
Okay. All right. Well, Alaska, and the last two states added to the Union back in 59-60 have a different geopolitical setting, if you will. Alaska doesn't have any counties, for instance. You don't have many counties yourself, but explain briefly again for our listeners the geopolitical divisions, county, city, state, for the state of Hawaii. And then, since you operate that policy level, are there any special emergency powers the governor has to aid in the response or the recovery from disasters?
Yeah, so geopolitical divisions, we're a relatively flat structure. We have the state government, and then we have four county agencies that are spread across the major islands. We do have a handful of special purpose districts or junior taxing authorities, but nothing compared to our mainland partners. So you have state agencies that are based out of Oahu, the city and county of Honolulu, and they are federated into the county operations, such as Maui County. But each of our state agencies has a different daily operating posture. I'll use our State Department of Health as an example. They are headquartered here on Oahu, and then they have three district health offices, one in Maui, one on the Big Island, one on Kauai. And there is no county district Maui County Health Office. So it's a state responsibility, legal and regulatory speaking, for health embedded in county operations. And so when you then go into an incident, each of these state agencies gets to play a different role. Are they supporting the county, or actually are they legally responsible? Our state DOT, as an example, they are headquartered here in Oahu. They have offices for air, water, and roads in each county, but they tend to play a support role unless it's state roads or state assets. So that makes it a bit challenging because of those state agencies. They have kind of a leg up on operations, but also there's an opportunity there because they work so closely with the county partners. We do have a Hawaii Revised Statute 127, which does give the state emergency management director and the governor authority to take actions when we have an emergencies. The full complement from preparedness, mitigation, response, and recovery. And that was used during the fires. It does allow for a lot of flexibility for purchasing, for calling up various resources, public or private, and it allows the flexibility of calling on the major disaster fund, which traditionally has been a relatively small pot of money, but in a disaster like we've seen in Maui, has definitely expanded.
Okay. Now, what's the population of Hawaii?
We're about 1.4 million spread across the islands.
Okay. So, you know, I'm trying to remember. Rhode Island was up about 1.8, you know, 20 years ago. So that's a small state, a small population, but a lot of tourists though, right? So what were the big thorny policy issues that sprung up from the fires? And which ones did you expect? And we talked briefly before we hit the record button, housing would be one, debris, we just know that would be one, but what were the ones you expected? And then where, if you were surprised to see something become an issue, that's a policy level that you didn't expect?
Yep. Number of policy issues, to your point about tourism, we were heavily dependent on visitors from international and from other states. You know, we may have 200,000 to 300,000 people in state at a time. And so that kind of balance, as the recovery has, the response to the recovery of balancing tourism with balancing the needs of a community. We saw a lot of this during the COVID incident out here with the quarantine. And when you have a very impactful incident like the fires, like we had in West Maui and Lahaina, you have to want to keep the economy going, but at the same time, you want to meet the needs of those who lost loved ones, who those lost property, and those who are just trying to get a footing again. So I think balancing tourism with the dependencies we have from an economic was one of those issues that continues to be discussed and really kind of thought about, not only for Maui, but for others. The second big one that you mentioned was debris. We traditionally don't have a lot of disasters that produce a lot of debris, unless we look back historically at Iniki or some of the tsunamis that have impacted the state. So we had a large fire in a small geographic area that generated and still has a lot of debris. So where do you put that? We have very small landfill capacities. The governor actually stepped up on this one and working with the mayor and FEMA, we went the route on the debris side of direct federal assistance with the Corps. So a lot of policy issues in there just regards to cost, the environmental siting of a temporary debris site, and then where the county long-term is trying to create capacity for day-to-day debris, but the fire. And I think the last big one that we have been focusing on, and it has probably been the big time commitment, has been housing. We've, like in many places, we've had a housing crisis before the incident. We have a we like to say Ohana or extended families that live in places. We've seen people that are underinsured, whether the homes are paid off or just their level of finances. And so, as of today, we have about 1,400 homes still in non-congregate sheltering. It's about 3,500 of population. And so just providing housing for those individuals, about 70% of them are renters. So it really becomes a major policy issue of how do you compassionately provide housing for those that have been displaced? And then how do you balance that with other resources from the federal government or from private partners or from the county to support those? So housing has really been the big one, and we probably could have a whole talk story session on disaster housing in the future.
Okay. Anytime there's a significant housing shortage following a disaster on the mainland, people always bring up the word trailers. Has that been broached at all in Hawaii?
We've had lots of conversation. There was a decision by the governor to not bring in trailers. Historically, FEMA Region 9 has not brought in trailers to Hawaii due to cost and timing. And so the question is, what happens to those trailers in the long run? One alternative, working closely with FEMA and a number of partners, many are aware of the term ADU, accessory dwelling unit, and using that terminology from a TDU, temporary dwelling unit, and being able to site those temporary dwelling units in locations that would support the survivors. So I think maybe we'll be able to solve the same objectives with temporary dwelling units. It's just the cost and how those get put in place for survivors in time is the real challenge.
Okay. And are those, a modular type of thing that can be put up real quickly?
Yep, they're modular. Some of them come kind of like not the company boxable, but they come either boxable or foldable or can be assembled. So there is an opportunity, I think, not only, as I like to say, when we have disasters, you can use the disaster maybe to improve or kind of rethink how a function is done. And disaster housing may, in the long run, help with our larger state housing challenges with temporary dwelling units, maybe being an opportunity for someone who's trying to get into the housing market.
Yeah. Folks, I don't know if you've ever seen this. I was at International Association of Emergency Managers Conference many years ago, and one of the vendors there had one of these folding, and it was probably 20 by 30, something like that, all folded flat. And then there's a team of them putting that thing up and taking it down. And, as far as getting the walls up and locked in place, it is a matter of less than a few minutes to do something like that. So that is a neat solution for a temperate climate, especially perhaps. So, well, there are, of course, operational responses to the disaster. Did any policy level actions taken to support the response and then to prepare for the recovery phase that will continue? So, very early on, was there a policy type decisions being made?
And the mayor has made a number of policy decisions. I think as we discussed the debris program, using the direct federal assistance and having the state in coordination with the county take that on. I know many states that have large disasters, that's a major policy decision. Some take that on and do it themselves, and then they go down the public assistance route. So that was a big one. I think it helped the county. We just have, in some of our counties, we just don't have a lot of bandwidth and capacity day to day, let alone for these large scale disasters. So I think the debris decision was one. The other one, back to housing, about 8 to 10 days into this, we had north of 8,000 or 9,000 people in congregate sheltering. And the governor made the decision in cooperation with the American Red Cross to put them in non-congregate sheltering. So because we, in particular in West Maui, we were able to get tourists safely off the islands, it opened up opportunities with the hotels and with American Red Cross to move that population out of congregate sheltering into non-congregate sheltering. So some may debate the value of that, but we thought it was very important in the early stages to provide safe, stable, and secure housing for those that were in the congregate sheltering, getting them into non-congregate sheltering conditions. Yeah, it was pretty remarkable to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not in a big gymnasium on cots, family separated, and that whole piece. Well, this has been good talking with you. Luke, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk in a bit more detail about some of these issues that we've already broached already. So stay tuned.
This podcast is being sponsored by Cobra, an emergency management software solution. Cobra provides a cloud-based EOC software that is intuitive, collaborative, and affordable. Visit cobrasoftware.com.
And we are back. And I guess we mentioned debris briefly, but how do you see that? Is that an operational issue, or what are the policy level implications that arise and must be dealt with? And you've mentioned some of those, but generally, I think people would say, well, that's an operational issue. And you did say the Corps, but not the Corps of Engineers, for anybody not familiar with what he wasn't talking about the Marine Corps when he said the Corps. So what about debris? Is it operational and recovery? Or how do you see that? How's it played out?
I think that there are many functions that I'm seeing from the State Disaster Recovery Coordinator side that have a continuum: housing, debris, and they start in the immediate response and stabilization side, and then they get legs and they transition in this gray area from response to recovery. And in an incident of this size, I think debris is a good example. With the potential environmental impacts and the impacts to property, we have worked very closely with the county in establishing processes to get individuals access to their property. But debris in particular has been a highly, I'll say, it's incident operational. There are a number of environmental concerns. We've had fires in Hawaii, but never the one of this size with the amount of property and loss of life and other impacts. And so just all the environmental kind of challenges that arise operationally, I haven't been directly in them, but the policy issues that do arise, the decisions that have been made by the governor, the mayor, and by FEMA and EPA and the Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, there's been a teamwork approach to identifying those. But I think some of the larger challenges that we're faced with is that there are only so many resources that Maui or the state has. So setting up a temporary debris site, making sure that environmental or cultural concerns, what I've learned since the fires, Lahaina was once the capital of the Hawaii kingdom. And so as you start to uncover and dig through burn areas, there are a lot of cultural implications to what was there prior. So there's actually, I think, what's been a real opportunity. There are cultural monitoring teams with each of these debris functions that are going on, and parcel by parcel, there are these teams that are there on site as the properties after right of entry has been given. They're on site to kind of make sure that if anything is uncovered, it's documented and properly and respectfully taken care of.
Okay. Would you say these are archaeology? Well, I'm trying to think of pronounce the word archaeological type teams, or are they more a community and heritage type?
It's a mix. So that there are cultural monitors that are there. Just as soon as you dig into many areas of Hawaii, but in particular to Lahaina, you start uncovering artifacts or remains of those that may have lived there for many generations prior to Western contact. And so there has been a heavy emphasis. The operational partners have really, I think it's going to set a new model. I'm not sure of many. I know there's a lot of disasters with the federally recognized tribes and in other areas, but I think they're really breaking some new ground with the cultural monitoring that is being included as the operations that are going on.
Just be glad you don't live in Rome or Athens, right? Anywhere you dig, you probably have some challenges there. Well, as we talked about a disaster of this scope, whether it's a small state or a large state, the legislative branch of government must have become heavily engaged. How's the governor's office working with the legislature to respond to the recovery challenges that you all face?
Traditionally, our legislature has been very active if they are, out of session or if they are in session. The House side of our legislature put together some working groups last fall, and so the emergency support functions, the recovery support functions, actually worked with these working groups. They covered a number of areas that kind of paralleled the functions. They came up with a report. And then that was used as kind of seeds for the current legislative session that started in the end of January that runs through May. There's a continued focus on housing from their view, and the governor's office has been working closely with them. And I think the other underlying element is just the cost of the incident. Anyone that's familiar with the Federal Emergency Management Stafford Act process, the Individual Assistance Program, the Public Assistance Program, the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, Direct Federal Assistance, Federal Operational Support, these programs are, I'll say, complicated at best. And communicating the match processes, traditionally it's 75-25. Right now, many of our programs are 90% federally funded, 10% state or local. And so communicating that information from state emergency management and with the governor's office and state budget and finance to the legislature, since they're working on the budget for fiscal year 2025, which for us runs July 1 of this year through June 30th of next year, has been a challenge. The governor has a number of priorities for the Maui fires, and making sure that the legislature has an understanding of the reimbursement process, the timing, has been a bit of a work in progress. But there are a lot of needs out there, not only for Maui, but for the rest of the state that they have to put a budget forward. And I think objectively, it has been very educational for them to get an understanding on some of these programs. And to be honest, some of the latency in reimbursement, since many of these programs are, you have to pay for the service up front and then ask for reimbursement, it does start to have impacts on a state or county fiscal year.
Significantly, even with a benefit of only having to put up 10% of the disaster. And that those are, would remind people, those are approved disaster costs. There's a lot of costs that are not federally reimbursed or eligible. So, any thoughts on that piece of it? Have you run into that?
Yes, particularly with the emergency protective measures, back housing and the non-congregate sheltering, that emergency protective measure is traditionally eligible. But the populations that the federal government would take care of, each of those survivors has their own story. Were they in the burn area? Did they have insurance? Have they provided documentation? And so I think what's been a bit of a learning curve for myself, and I think the state partners, the thousands of households that we have had that have to go through that FEMA process, they end up in a number of FEMA programs, eligible or ineligible, which then makes the disposition of what the state or county government would owe, regardless of the match cost share, very hard to communicate in real time. And I think that has been from the COFA and undocumented, and there was some recent news from Washington, D.C. on for future disasters, that group would be included. We do have a big COFA population that was impacted. To just the insurance, we could have a whole nother
I've got a question on the insurance.
Disaster insurance. But yes, those are some of the takeaways, at least in that area. So,
okay. All right. And I got a few more questions. I know you've got another meeting coming up, so I'll try and rip through these quickly. But one of the significant things out of this was the emotional upheaval of number of deaths and assuming also injuries. The last death toll I remember reading was 100. Does that still hold true? Or
we're at 101 officially.
Okay. And so there's the loss of homes, incomes, because, you know, a significant tourist area from that standpoint. So from a policy level then, how's the emotional toll been dealt with? And are there plans in place to continue to deal with these outcomes that, you know, it's not going to be over in a month or years. It could be, you know, someone's lost loved ones, they lost their income, everything that can go on for many years. Anything policy level there?
Created an Office of Wellness and Resilience. It's one of the peer organizations that I work with. And we actually had conversations last summer on trauma-informed care. And so there's been a heavy emphasis in this incident with the impact of the number of victims and the survivors that continue to kind of readjust to life as they're seeing it. So there's an active group of federal, state, local, and private partners from a trauma-informed care perspective of working with them in the non-congregate sheltering setting at the Disaster Recovery Center. So there's been a big emphasis from the governor and the teams that are out there to work. You know, I'll just make a comment. As we've seen in other disasters, I do believe there's some disaster fatigue, not only for the survivors, but for you know, the men and women who have been supporting Maui across the board. So one thing I hope, you know, moving forward is that with the scale that we have seen, being able to maybe federate some of these programs a little closer, so a survivor is not having to retell their story so many times. I know there's some efforts at the federal level to kind of have a unified shop of information, but we have seen just with thousands of households, they're communicated with on a very routine basis with multiple organizations, and with the scales that we have seen, that can add additional trauma and emotional toll. Again, as they try to adjust to where they need to move on to.
Okay, well, you've been very busy dealing with this, but I don't know if you filed nationally, property insurance claims and premiums are increasing in many states. I talked to someone who has a sister in Florida, there, her property insurance went up 70%. And some insurance companies have pulled out providing insurance in some states, you know, California being one and Florida being another one. Has that type of impact been evidenced in Hawaii as of now, or are there any policy level actions being taken?
There is many conversations going on about insurance. We had been watching before the fire some of our states on the mainland, you know, California and Florida, and some of the actions, particularly for hurricane, and the other one for us has been lava on the Big Island, and very susceptible insurance markets. You know, the state of Hawaii, we don't have fire riders like we have seen in some other states. So your basic homeowners policy would cover, but we are seeing a tightening in the market and kind of a bit of a cascading impact of the fires on the insurance industry, in particular with some rates being raised. And so this one is going to have to be looked at. We used to have a Hawaii Hurricane Relief Fund that was a product of Hurricane Iniki. There is some legislation out there to look at expanding that to maybe similar to one of the programs they have in California, to a broader kind of state secondary opportunity that if individuals cannot get insurance. I think the other one, and there was actually a PBS special last night that is a our condo industry kind of related not only to the fires, but some of the extreme weather events. Some of our condos are now lacking the ability to get insurance, in particular for hurricanes. And there's a, with the larger housing challenges that are being faced, not only here, but across the country, with a push to get individuals to live in more consolidated areas in these high rises. If the high rises are not insured, then some mortgages may not be open to those individuals. Then when there are events, those properties will be susceptible. So we have some legislation that is being considered to create kind of a secondary fail safe, but all those are open for discussion between now and the end of the session. And we'll have to see what comes out of it. But it's definitely one that I think, as you said, it's not solvable overnight. And if we do continue to see some of these, I don't want to say extreme weather events, but if we start to see a normalization of these large scale events, you know, Hawaii and other insurance markets are going to continue to struggle with how to manage those risks.
Okay. And I just have to emphasize what Luke said about condo market and disasters or fires. A previous podcast had an attorney on who represented condo owners when they had a property loss. And it's a very complicated thing about what portion of that building is being covered by your policy, and then what part has to be covered by the building owner and operator. So it's not simple as owning your own home and experiencing a loss. Well, Luke, I know you have a strong background in mitigation. Are there any significant policy steps being taken to reduce the future impact from wildfires? People have a tendency to always focus on what happened, but perhaps you can broaden that up. Other disasters stemming from this event. Anybody looking at mitigation policy-wise?
The Emergency Management Program administers the Stafford Act Hazard Mitigation Program. And this is one of our larger disasters for Stafford Act funding. So there's an opportunity for maybe north of $200 million in that pot, which will allow for opportunities. State Emergency Management has invested in weather monitoring network enhancements for West Maui with the U.S. Fire Administration putting sensors in to kind of help give those kind of precursors of fire conditions that may be unfolding. But between the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program and the Community Development Block Grant money that will eventually come from Housing and Urban Development, it's a real opportunity for the state and Maui and Lahaina to kind of relook at not only fire threats, but coastal threats. We've had a lot of sea level and climate change challenges in this area. And so with the amount of money that will come in, there will be opportunities to reduce those vulnerabilities. One area that we are having conversations in the legislature with is looking at our building codes, trying to enhance those. We do not have a wildland fire part of our code like some of the other states do. That was being discussed. But traditionally, our building codes, the state adopts the set of codes, and then our counties have 2 years. So we've been about 3 to 4 years behind. And so there, you know, that has housing implications, that has other day-to-day implications. So I would say there's a healthy dialogue right now of, you know, how far do you take codes, which may have implications on day-to-day housing versus a mitigation opportunity. As a mitigator, I would say, if not now, when? And so, those have financial implications and being balanced. And so I do think the code opportunity in the legislature is an important one. And looking at natural systems, water in particular in West Maui, since Western contact times, has really changed West Maui, and from the plantation times to current kind of tourism. And so they used to call Lahaina the Venice of the Pacific. And mm-hmm. It was a very beautiful area that was very one with the environment. And if you've been in Lahaina in the last 30 or 40 years, it's usually a pretty hot, dry place. And a lot of that is because natural systems have been disconnected. So I do think there's an opportunity on the mitigation and resiliency side to look at the connection of water from the crest to the shore and balancing a rebuild. But a lot of those decisions will have to be made, obviously, by the community there.
Okay. Well, Luke, is there anything else you'd like to share that we did not talk about already, or is it something you'd like to highlight even more for our listeners? You know, a warning, perhaps, something.
Wearing the state disaster recovery coordinator hat and not being in on the incident response side as much has really shown that, you know, there's a resiliency in the teams that are supporting the state and the county and the private sector and the federal government as part of this incident. But they're in that continuum of response and incident coordination. And as recovery stands up, and we've all seen those graphics, you get into these gray areas that in small incidents, that gray area is very finite. It's incident stabilization has occurred, and recovery can begin, and the lights on response fade away. And I think the most telling and challenging thing 7+ months into this incident is the response has come to a close, but the incident coordination with some of these large missions and that gray area between response and recovery for states that have been through this and other organizations, it's very challenging because everyone else outside of the impacted area has gone back to normal, relatively speaking. For Maui County, for Lahaina, for West Maui, you have this broad set of operations in this gray area between incident coordination and then short-term recovery kind of where we are now that takes a lot. So I'm learning a lot, and it's been a great opportunity to support Maui and the governor. So, and I appreciate the opportunity with you, Eric, to come on and share a little bit about what's happening here in Hawaii. And we definitely would encourage visitors to come visit us and enjoy the beauty here.
Yes, Hawaii is open for business. And I just want to say thank you again to Luke Byers for being a guest here on the Disaster Zone podcast. And Luke, you've already acknowledged being a guest, so you can be silent. Although I would say one other thing that I mentioned to Luke, that, oh, you lost weight, and he's also lost hair. So I don't know how much hair he lost over this particular event. It may have been a catastrophic, or maybe it's been gradual in that. But this has been a great conversation today about policy level implications of one disaster. And while we sometimes get captured by the disaster response, perhaps you picked up some tips and lessons learned that you can help prepare your state and community for the policy implications of disasters. And I also want to remark that we're recording this at 5:30 in the morning for Luke. So thank you, Luke, for that. And lastly, a reminder to everyone, be safe and think about what you can do today to become better prepared for the next disaster. And in the future, you might be traveling to Hawaii for a vacation. You know what to be prepared for if disaster strikes. Thanks for listening, and be safe.
Tune in again soon for more information on all aspects of disasters. You can also check out the Disaster Zone blog at www.disaster-zone.com.